Color coded? You didn't get?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being patient with us. I'm going to go ahead and open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Today is our last day for hearing bills and working bills. As you have seen from the agenda, we have a number of bills that need to go through the process today. Give fair warning, if necessary, we will be returning sometime this afternoon to complete our work. There are a number of bills that are here that have been carried over for work sessions. The plan for the committee is that we will be working through those first. We have a couple of bills that are going to be for public hearing and possible work sessions. Those will be at the conclusion or toward the end. And the reason for that is that we have so much to get done. I want to get the stuff that's already been public heard out of the way. And then if we have to return this afternoon, we'll do so. With that, we're going to have three different councils that will be working with us today. And so we're going to be moving around on the agenda so we can have a little continuity for their work and they're not jumping up and running up here every other bill. So with that, we're going to start off with our work sessions.
2385.
Yep. First work session, and colleagues, what we're going to do is we're going to try to move swiftly, but at the same time, I want to make certain everyone knows where we're going because there are going to be amendments on a number of these bills. With that, we'll open a work session for House Bill 2385. It's the first one under the work sessions on page one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2385 prohibits smoking in a motor vehicle while a person under age of 17 is in the vehicle. We heard this on May 13th. It has no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact, and no amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Now I'm just going to find it.
No problem.
Okay. All right. So it's ready to move, and what I'm going to do is I'll entertain a motion for House Bill 2385 to move it to rules.
Mr. Chair, I move that we refer House Bill 2385 to rules.
Senator Boquist moves that House Bill 2385 be referred to the Committee on Rules. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close the work session on House Bill 2385. Open a work session on House Bill 3343.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3343, actually, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
This one has a conflict amendment, which I don't think we have yet. I think we're still waiting for.
All right. So
but I can describe it, or we can move on.
Why don't we wait till we get the conflict, because there's going to be enough action before we probably get it. So we'll close the work session on House Bill 3343 until we get the amendment that's necessary. And should we go into the next page? And we're now going to open a work session on House Bill 3094.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3094A extends the sunset for four years on the conditional exemption from disclosure of public records for researchers at OHSU. We heard it yesterday. It has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move that we refer House Bill 3094A to rules.
Senator Boquist moves that we take House Bill 3094 and refer it to rules. Any discussion? Colleagues, want to put on the record, and this is for the parties that I've spoken to regarding this bill. The intent of the chair is to move this to rules for the purpose of getting an amendment that will allow the sunset to be extended for 2 years. We expect that during the interim period that there will be discussions as to modifications as to what is currently provided for under the law and how records are being disclosed or not disclosed at the facility. So with that, any other comments? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll close the work session on 3094. And we're now going into House Bill 2358.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2358 prohibits free samples of non-cigarette tobacco products. We heard this yesterday as well. It has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's not correct.
Oh, it has dash three amendment we're not considering.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vestigal, we are...
We had a dash three amendment, but we're not considering that
Thank
amendment.
You.
That's the rules. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move 2358 to rules.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2358 to rules. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll close that work session, and we're going to open up our next work session, which will be the next bill, House Bill 2136A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2136A prohibits distribution of tobacco products from vending machines except in bars, taverns, or lounges. We do have an A4 amendment that allows vending machines in any establishment where the premises are off limit to minors. We heard this yesterday as well. It has a revenue statement that's been issued and no fiscal impact. I'm sorry, we don't have a fiscal on the A4 amendment yet.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the dash A4s into Senate Bill, or excuse me, House Bill 2136A.
And, Mr. Chair, in order to move this bill, we'll need to suspend the rules.
Right. So is there any discussion regarding the amendment being added, dash fours? Any objection? So ordered.
Question, Council. Council, I'm assuming, since this doesn't seem to have much impact on the state itself, that there would be a minimal fiscal, if any at all?
That is correct.
Because the original bill has no fiscal.
The original bill has no fiscal.
And we're actually restricting it more.
Yes. I think it's just a paperwork issue.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to suspend the rules to move this bill.
Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to allow us to consider moving House Bill 2136A as amended by the dash fours to the floor. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2136A as amended with the A4s, to the floor with a due pass.
All right. Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2136 as amended by the A4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Any volunteers? Senator Dingfelder will be our carrier for House Bill 2136A. All right. Let's go down to this one here.
2434.
All right, opening up House Bill 2434A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2434A decreases the statute of ultimate repose for large commercial structures from 10 years to 6 years. We heard this on May 26th. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact and no amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move that we refer 2434A to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Boquist moves that we refer House Bill 2434A to the Rules Committee. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2434A, and we will open up a work session on House Bill 2802A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2802A increases the cap on non-economic damages for wrongful death and other statutorily created torts to $1.5 million. There's no revenue impact. There was a fiscal statement issued. There's no amendment. We heard this on May 26th.
All right, so this bill is ready to go without any amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2802A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dingfelder moves House Bill 2802A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I'm opposed to this bill.
Okay. Any discussion?
Chair, I just would prefer it if it had been $1 million, but I'll be no vote.
Okay. Any objection? And let the record reflect that Senator Wissett and Senator Boquist are objecting to the movement of the bill to the floor. With that, we do have sufficient votes. It will, so ordered, be moved to the floor, and the chair will carry this one unless Senator Bonamici wants it. All right, Senator, I'll be the carry on 2802A. And we'll now open up our work session on the following bill, House Bill 2604A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2604A requires the state health plans, health insurance, health care providers that transmit any protected health information to include in annual reports descriptions of procedures to safeguard individually identifiable health information. We heard this on May 26th. There is an A2 amendment and an A4 amendment. The A2 amendment adds a 4-year sunset, and the A4 amendment exempts entities that follow federal HIPAA requirements. We do not have fiscal statements on the A2 or A4 amendment, so we'll need to suspend the rules to pass this bill.
All right.
Question of counsel.
Yes.
Counsel, you said we don't have it on the A4. Is there any reason to believe that it would increase any existing fiscal?
I don't believe it would increase the fiscal at all. I think there's a paperwork issue.
Well, let's get it in the main bill while I'm signaling. Mr. Chair, I move the A2 into 2604A.
Senator Boquist moves the A2s into House Bill 2604. Any discussion?
A2?
Yeah. A2 was the...
The sunset.
The sunset for 4 years. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 into 2604A.
Senator Boquist now moves the A4 amendments into House Bill 2604. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I think that the A4 amendments would defeat the purpose of the bill, but I'll still support the bill. I think it weakens it significantly.
All right. Chair's perspective on this, based on the testimony we heard when that was presented, that if someone is in compliance with the rules, there's not a need to, let's say, duplicate those services. This will, in fact, though, make certain that those who aren't covered by the federal rules, that aren't complying with federal rules, will, in fact, need to file a compliance report as required under the main bill. Any other discussion? Any objection? The A4s are now in. Doug?
Senator Winsett. Rules?
What's the A3?
Fiscal.
It was the hospital. The 2-year and then 2-year sunset.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules for requirement for fiscal for 2604 A4 amendment.
All right. Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to consider the passage of 2604 as amended by the A2s and the A4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the suspension of the rules? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move 2604A as amended with the A2s and the A4s to the floor with a due pass.
All right. Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2604 as amended by the A2s and the A4s with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Bonamici, will you carry this one up? Okay. The chair will carry 2604 to the floor. And we'll close that work session and next bills. All right, we're dropping down on the agenda, down to 3271. I'll open up the work session on House Bill 3271.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3271 has a main bill and 3 amendments to it. We heard this on May 21st, and the main bill increases the penalty for harassment for electronic threats. This is from Representative Stiegler, and we have an A3 amendment that changes the penalty from the main bill from the Class C felony to the Class A misdemeanor. It also creates a crime of aggravated harassment as knowingly propelling saliva, blood, urine, semen, or feces, or other dangerous substances at a corrections officer or a public safety officer, and that is made as a Class C felony. It has an A5 amendment. It creates the crime of vehicular homicide, defined as causing the death of another person while having a suspended license resulting from a criminal offense as a Class C felony, and has an A6 amendment, which incorporates
2302, which passed the House with 60 votes and passed House Judiciary Committee 10-0, and that extended the amount of time a city or county has to seek reimbursement from a person committed to a local correctional facility to 6 years. And in this one, we have fiscal statements on all the amendments, and they're all minimal, and so no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair, move the A3 into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the A3s into House Bill 3271. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, move the A5 into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the A5s into House Bill 3271. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, move the A6 into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the A6 into House Bill 3271. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move 3271A as amended with the A3, A5, and A6 to the floor. We do pass.
Senator Boquist now moves the House Bill 3271 as amended by the A3, A5, and A6s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair will carry this bill. We'll close the work session on 3271. And where do we go next? All right, we're going on to page 3. We're looking at the third entry, which is House Bill 2502, and open the work session on that bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2502A authorizes the seizure or production of documents in accordance with a subpoena or warrant from a recipient outside Oregon. We heard this on May 22nd. At that time, the committee moved the A4 amendment in the bill. Since then, the Department of Justice looked at the language and asked LC to draft another amendment that incorporates the A4 amendment, but also makes a technical change, and that's the A5 amendment, and that change clarifies that reference to courts was a court instead of the court to make sure we're covering pretrial subpoenas. We don't want to have a pending matter to be able to use this. So this one is does not have a fiscal statement yet on the A5 amendment.
On the A5, the fiscal were further restricting, correct?
So
the
right.
And the A4 did not have a fiscal.
The A4 had a minimal.
Had a minimal fiscal. Okay, Mr. Chair, move the A5. We'll hold on here. We have to pull the A4 out, don't we?
Yes, we need to remove the
A4. Mr. Chair, I move that the A4 amendment previously adopted to 2502A be removed.
All right. I think for procedure, I need to have the rules suspended to do that or not. I'm going to go ahead.
Sure.
I think we have to rescind.
Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of removing an amendment from 2502A.
All right. Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to consider the rescission of a previous amendment adopted in House Bill 2502A. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that the previously adopted A4 amendment be removed from the main bill of House Bill 2502A.
Senator Boquist moves that we rescind the previously adopted A4 amendments out of House Bill 2502. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that the A5 be placed in House Bill 2502A.
Senator Boquist now moves that we adopt the A5s into House Bill 2502. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move to suspend the rules in regards to fiscals for 2502A in regards to the A5 so we may consider the bill.
Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to allow us to consider the movement of House Bill 2502A. As amended by the A5s. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Sure. I move House Bill 2502A as amended by the A5s to the floor with a due pass.
All right. Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2502 as amended by the A5s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
As long as I don't have to carry it after all that.
I'm just getting ready to ask you to. Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Bonamici will be our carrier on 2502. Thank you very much. We'll close that work session. And cancel.
Number 2713.
Dropping down to the next one, open up a work session on House Bill 2713A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2713A was the Public Safety Officer Bill of Rights. We heard this on May 22nd, and we have an A3 amendment that allows for preliminary questions that don't trigger the investigations and also makes it clear that it does not affect employees who are covered by collective bargaining agreements. We do not have a fiscal yet on the A3. There's no revenue impact on this bill. There is a fiscal statement issued on the earlier version of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. And
do we need to suspend the rules to adopt the A3s?
Yes.
So, Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of adoption of the A3s into House Bill 2713.
Senator Dingfelder moves that we suspend the rules to consider the adoption of the A3s into House Bill 2713. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
And Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the A3s into House Bill 2713.
All right, Senator Dingfelder moves that we adopt the A3s into House Bill 2713. Open it up for discussion. Yes, Senator Boquist.
Other than it's an improvement, Mr. Chair.
It is. All right. Any objection?
Yeah.
Any objection to the adoption of A3s into 2713? Not seeing or hearing any, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2713, as amended with the dash A3s, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dingfelder moves House Bill 2713, as amended by the A3s, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right. And any objections? We have two individuals, Senator Wissett and Senator Boquist, objecting. We do have sufficient votes. Order to move to the floor. The chair will carry 2713A to the floor.
Okay.
All right.
I'm think I'm done with mine.
Are you done? All right. We're going to take a brief recess so we can go off the record for a moment.
Let's, sir, just throw it out there and I'll stumble through it.
All right, the Senate Judiciary Committee is back to order. What we're going to do is we're going to continue. We've changed councils so we can work through the next set of bills that she had assigned to her. What we have is one of the bills is for colleagues and for those here. House Bill 2175, we have a conflict amendment that is not ready. We're going to just see if it gets done before we conclude this morning. If not, then we may have to be coming back to take care of that one this afternoon. But at this point, we need to just kind of put that one on hold. So the first one we're going to be doing with Shannon will be House Bill 2874. It's the third listed. And I understand because this is under the possible reconsideration and work session category that we need to do some steps. And Council, why don't you just walk us through that so people understand where we're going before we get there.
Essentially what happened in House Bill 2874A is that we adopted the Dash 1 Amendment. However, that was adopted, that was drafted on the House side, and it didn't perfectly conform with the bill once the bill had been amended. So we need to rescind the Dash 1 and then re-adopt the A3, which is the exact same language, just drafted to conform with the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering House Bill 2874A as previously adopted by the committee.
Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to allow us to consider reconsider the previous amendment, the Dash A1s, in House Bill 2874. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that we remove the A1 as previously adopted by this committee from House Bill 2874A.
All right. Senator Boquist moves that we rescind the A1s that were adopted previously in House Bill 2874. Is it just in Dash 1? There's not A's?
No.
Okay. I'm going to re-clarify that motion. Senator Boquist, as he said, and I misinterpreted, moves that we rescind the Dash 1s that were previously incorporated into House Bill 2874. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, I move the A3 amendment into House Bill 2874.
All right, Senator Boquist moves that we add the A3s into House Bill 2874. Any objection? Any discussion first? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, question of counsel.
Yes.
Counsel, considering that the A3 is really a technical change, do we have any reason to believe the fiscal will change?
No.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of considering the main bill in regards to the fiscal statement.
Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to consider further work and passage of House Bill 2874 as amended by the A3s. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2874 to the floor as amended with the A3 with due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2874 as amended by the A3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Chair, I think, was the primary carrier on this, and he'll continue to be so. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2874A. And Council, where are you taking this next?
Ladies and gentlemen, where are we going next?
2344, that's what I'm showing, the color-coded here. All right, so we're dropping on to page 2 toward the end. We're opening up a work session on House Bill 2344.
And House Bill 2344 requires sexually explicit property or material involving a victim of a criminal conduct remain in the control of law enforcement agency or the court throughout the criminal proceeding. There is no revenue and a minimal fiscal.
All right. And I need to just grab that one. I know what we're doing. All right. So we got 2344, Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2344 be referred to the Committee on Rules.
All right. Senator Boquist moves that we move House Bill 2344 to the Committee on Rules. Any discussion?
I have a question, Mr. Chair. Are we going to adopt any of the amendments before we send it there, or just send it the way it is?
At this point, there's, let's say, more work needs to be done before amendments will be considered. All right. Any objection to the motion?
Mr. Chair, just for comments in regard to what Senator Bonamici, I would just like it on the record that there is more work to be done so that it doesn't, whatever. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Any objection to the motion? So ordered. And House Bill 2344 is on its way to the Rules Committee. That's correct. And
2727.
Yeah. Open up a work session on House Bill 2727A.
House Bill 2727A was first heard on May 21st. It exempts information identifying the holder or applicant for a concealed handgun license from being released to the public unless the requester can establish by clear and convincing evidence that the public interest in disclosure outweighs the holder's privacy. It allows a CHO holder to request notification from the sheriff if there's a records request, and it requires the custodian of records to consider any information the holder provides prior to making a decision to release the information. A 11 amendments before the committee simply set forth in this bill the process currently in place in other statute for challenging a denial of public records request. So it simply establishes, again, that if you are denied the record that you're requesting, in this case it would be the CHL application, then you would go from the custodian of records to your district attorney, who then would consider it again, and then after that you would proceed to the circuit court to appeal the decision.
All right. And it also has a similar procedure for if the record is kept at the state level, where it would go to the Attorney General?
That's correct.
And it's not just applications, but also, I guess, actual holders would be also included in this?
The record of the holder or the application, yes.
Okay.
And I have a question of counsel. Is this a new procedure, or is it just putting this procedure in this particular statute?
It's simply, yes, this currently exists in other statute. It's simply just copying that and putting it into this one to make it extra clear.
Yeah, it's codifying for those, if I remember correctly, I think Senator Boquist wanted to make certain everyone knew how these decisions that were being made or would be made, how the procedure would be to, let's say, have them reviewed and reflected based on whatever the custodian record had determined. And this works really both ways. And it could, in fact, be used by, at least I would think that you could use it for if the parties had notice as to whether or not it was, in fact, a public record. So, Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I move the A11 into the 2727.
Senator Boquist moves the A11 into the House Bill 2727. Any discussion?
It's Senator Boquist. Step in the right direction. Not far enough yet, Mr. Chair, but step in the right direction.
All right. Any objection to the A11s going into the main bill? Not hearing or seeing it? So ordered. Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2727 with the A11 be referred to the Committee on Rules.
All right. Senator Boquist moves that House Bill 2727, as amended by the A11s, be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is that with or without a recommendation?
I don't know.
It's up to you.
Yeah, sure.
With a do pass recommendation.
Right. I'll speak to my bill.
And we have the motion before us. Discussion.
How about without a do pass? No do pass.
All right.
I'll support it if it doesn't. As long as it doesn't.
We're discussion now. And Mr. Chair, I want to speak to.
Well, before we get there, I want to restate the motion. Make sure we have the motion that's before us, because I understand we had a friendly amendment. So at this time, we have House Bill 2727 as amended by the dash A11s to be referred to the Committee on Rules without any recommendation. Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, there's another amendment you and I have discussed, and I still think this needs work in rules.
Senator Whitson.
Good.
Okay. Any other questions? Any objection? So ordered.
Tell me these things.
All right, we're now going to House Bill 2238, the next on the agenda. Open a work session.
House Bill 2238 increases the penalty for refusing to take a breath test by increasing the period of time a person is ineligible to receive a hardship permit. This was first heard back on May 21st. You have -3 amendments before the committee, which would require a person to be notified that if he or she refused a breath test and had a previous DUI or was currently in diversion, or a previous DUI within the preceding 5 years, they would be subject to the extended waiting period of 3 years.
Amendment.
Should be the A3s.
Mr. Chair, I move the A3 into 2238.
It's already had a move. Is it? All right, we're going to check to see if it's a 3 or an A.
It's just a 3. It's just a 3. It's not an A3.
That's 24.
Dash 3. It's just a dash.
Okay. So Senator Boquist moves that we adopt the dash 3s into House Bill 2238. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Question of counsel, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We're awaiting a fiscal on the dash 3, and did we have it? There was minimal fiscal in the main bill. Is there any reason to believe that the A3 will increase the fiscal or will it decrease the fiscal?
What Senate may do is have their ODOT may have to redraft a form that they provide to DUII suspects. It's the rights and consequences form that they have to read to them. And that doesn't matter because we have a minimal fiscal statement.
Good. So now where are we at? We have the A3, right? Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2238 as adopted, as amended by the dash 3 to the floor with due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2238 to the floor as amended by the dash 3 amendments. Yes.
Thank you. I believe the dash 3 is a step in the right direction, but I still can't support this bill. I think that I would much prefer to see something like the Washington approach of ignition interlocks. I'm concerned that there may be legitimate reasons for people refusing, and I'm also concerned that with the hardship issue, there may be an increase in people driving without a license if they need to get to work. So although I recognize the problems of driving under the influence, I'm not going to be supporting this particular approach to deal with that issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Comment, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And Mr. Chair, just for the record, I'm supporting the bill, but I would, during the interim, like to see more work on the interlock system because I think it's a more efficient way to address some of these issues, despite what ODOT says.
I just want to look at the dash. On the dash 3s, does that have blood in there, or is it just urine?
It could be just urine.
I looked at it before. It was just urine. I'm just looking to see if this is the correct bill.
This is just for the breath.
Yeah, it's just only the refusal.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure.
Didn't.
All right. So we have the any more discussion on the dash 3s?
Just to echo the comments that were made by my colleague, Senator Boquist.
All right. It's the chair's intent, based on what we have discussed during the previous hearing on this, that during the interim that we will be looking at this as a broader perspective. If you remember, there are a number of bills that came before both judiciary committees that were dealing with the potential of having interlock requirements. And because of that, I think it's one of those areas that we will need to have further discussions, more detailed than we could provide during the session itself. And so it is the intent of the chair, and if council will make a note, that we keep this on our quote-unquote things to do during the interim. So with that, any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered, and Senator Senator Polonici registered as a no. All right. And that takes it.
We're not volunteering to carry it over here.
Senator Wissett will be our carry on House Bill 2238. Thank you. Close the work session on 2238. And.
26 is the 39.
Yeah. All right, opening up the work session on House Bill 2339A.
House Bill 2339A expands the information exempt from the public disclosure to include certain personal information of public safety officers, district attorneys, deputy district attorneys, attorney generals, assistant attorney generals, and allows for disclosure of records to financial institutions and title companies for business purposes. A5 amendments that came in this morning make some changes, and I believe the clerks are here to speak to those as well. Among those changes are that the request must be made in writing. When the request is made to any agency, it has to be in writing and list the specific documents the person does not want to be disclosed. For the purposes of the clerks, it's limited to the top, basically the 10 most common documents. Also, we have an expanded definition of, pardon me, not definition, but it expands the people who may take advantage of this, and that would be to federal prosecutors, city attorneys who work with criminal cases, and
U.S.
attorneys. And also, the definition of financial institution is clarified in that it's, if I can find it, it quotes the statute that actually provides the lengthy definition of financial institutions. 706.008.
All right, so this is one that we've got the amendment that just came in. I know that at least one of our committee members had some concerns as to how the amendments might play as they impact or how the bill would be impacting county clerks. So Jan Coleman is here, I believe, and Georgette Brown. If y'all want to come forward, I'd like to have your comments regarding the Dash 5s on record so we have a record as to where people are at before we take any action. And thank you for being here, and thank you for being so patient over this last week. I know that we've had a number of bills that have been carried over. Today's the day.
Thank you, Chair, for this. We appreciate the opportunity to present an amendment.
Right, and I need you to just put your name on the record.
Georgette Brown, a former Josephine County Clerk representing the Oregon Clerks Association.
And Jan Coleman, representing the Oregon Clerks Association. I'm the former Yamhill County Clerk.
All right, I'm sorry.
As Chair Prosansky, we have reviewed the Dash 5s, and certainly these are much more palatable to us than what the original bill was. This at least gives us something to work with and should make the fiscal, I worked on the fiscal last night, and it should make the fiscal less. We're still going to have a fiscal that's unavoidable in this situation, but it should help that situation some.
Okay. All right, questions? Georgia, did you have anything else?
No, Jan said it because we're very pleased that we do have this amendment that hopefully you'll be voting in.
Okay. Any questions for the panel? Thank you very much for being here, and thank you for coming forward. So, Chair will entertain a motion on the Dash A5s.
Mr. Chair, I move the A5 into 2339, and then I'll speak to my motion.
All right. Senator Boquist moves the Dash A5s into House Bill 2339. Discussion. Senator Boquist.
Chair, it's my understanding that everybody's comfortable, since everybody supported this, that everybody's comfortable with this compromise.
Right.
They don't necessarily like it, but
Somewhere
in between, it sounds like.
All right. Any other comments?
I have a question. I'm sorry if I missed this. Do we have a new fiscal on the Dash 5? We don't, because it just came in, correct?
Correct. Ms. Coleman actually drafted a preliminary one that would be turned into fiscal. It is a reduction on what the official fiscal was previous to the Dash 5s.
Right. Well, the previous fiscal was significant. Mm-hmm. They said that the clerk said that they estimated that the statewide impact would be $1.3 million.
I believe now they estimate it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $120,000.
So is this going to Ways and Means then?
It's a county fiscal.
$129,000.
Okay.
Sounds to me like it's made the
the motion to go to...
Mr. Chair, there's no state fiscal.
It's a county.
Oh, that's county.
County impact. The question is whether it's an unfunded mandate.
Right.
We need to be considering that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Wissa?
We've reduced the unfunded mandate from 1.2 million to how much?
Right.
I think it's down to 120,000. So I guess the chair is open as to, you know, at this point, as to where, you know, what we can do.
Well, we should put the A5 in.
Why don't we do, yeah, let's put the A5s in, and then we've got the next one after that. So we have that amendment, that motion regarding the A5s. Any objection to it being amended into the bill? There's none? So ordered.
Question of counsel. Considering where LFO is right now, what's the chances of getting a fiscal back by 5 o'clock?
I think that's very realistic. The reality is that Ms. Coleman turned in the mock-up that she did. I would expect that Mr. Walker, who does excellent work downstairs, will probably be able to incorporate that fairly quickly. I don't expect that it'll probably depart much from this that she's actually written up.
Mr. Chair, we still have, we have at least one bill we have to carry to this afternoon.
We have one at this point that needs to be carried, so the options would be, one, we could carry this over, two is another alternative.
Let's wait.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend we wait until...
Right, let me put the other alternative on here. The other thing, and we may want to consider this afternoon, if we don't get it, is to actually move it out of the committee and asking the President's office to consider what, if anything, in a way of a subsequent. So that's something to think about. All right, so I'm going to go ahead. We have the A5s in, correct, counsel? And so we're going to go ahead and close the work session that we currently have open on House Bill 2339. And at this point, this will be one of our carryovers this afternoon, and we'll go through those as we get to the end. All right, now we're opening up a work session on House Bill 3263.
House Bill 3263 extends the statute of limitations for certain sex crimes if the defendant is identified on the basis of DNA sample comparisons. There was no amendment. This had no revenue, and a fiscal statement was issued. It was issued on April 9th and should be in front of the committee. And it's simply based on, it's indeterminate, and then simply just notes that by preserving this evidence and extending the statute of limitations, they may in the future be more prosecutions.
All right. There's no amendments. Nothing needs to be done except moving forward with the motion.
Mr. Chair, move 3263 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 3263 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Ordered, and the chair will carry this unless someone else would like to carry it.
I'm volunteering today.
All right. The chair will be the carrier on 3263. We'll close the work session on 3263. And now we will open up a work session on House Bill 2441A.
House Bill 2441A modifies current law that requires corroboration before a confession is admissible and creates an exception for sex crimes against vulnerable victims when the confession is deemed trustworthy and the victim is incompetent to testify. The A7s and A5s have been adopted into this bill back on the 26th. And we have all the financial statements. There was a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal with no statement issued.
All right, so the bill's ready to move. No additional amendments or anything needs to be done at this point.
That's correct.
I just wanted to confirm we did adopt those two amendments?
We did.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2441A with the amendments be referred to the Committee on Rules.
All right, Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2441 as amended by the previous adoption of the A, what were those numbers?
A5 and
A7s. A5s and A7s be referred to the Rules Committee. Any discussion? Senator Boquist.
Just briefly, I'm still concerned about the law, that law enforcement ought to be the person that's doing the recording, but it'll go to Rules and they'll work there.
All right, my understanding based on that comment is that some of the concerns is how broad it was.
Yeah.
Potentially. Just want to put that on the record. All right. Any other discussions or any comments before we move on this? So ordered.
I think there's still a constitutional issue there that troubles me a little bit.
All right. So thank you for putting your comments on the record. With that, we are going to so order, and that one is on its way to rules. And Shannon, that takes care of it.
Thank you, second.
All right. Thank you very much. So we're clearing off the record for a moment. We now have Mr. Taylor here as our counsel, and we're going to, go back to the top of the agenda, if I'm not mistaken. And just want to check on that one there. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session for a possible reconsideration on House Bill 3295.
Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended by and the vote by which 3295 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation be reconsidered.
All right, Senator Boquist, that we moves that we reconsider the vote of moving House Bill 3295 to the floor for further reconsideration. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
You need the dash twos, is this
Mr. Chairman, as a committee, the dash two amendments came from a work group. The juvenile director said that they would prefer not to have the amendments, even though they originally recommended them, so we're not moving on the amendments.
Yeah, the dash twos, the chair will not entertain a motion on the dash twos. This was some work that was in the process on some bigger issues. It has been determined at this point that those are not appropriate. And my understanding is that what we're going to consider is moving the bill as it was originally presented to us without amendment. Is that correct, Council?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Correct.
Senator Boquist.
So there's no amendment then?
Mr. Chairman, give me this. No amendment.
No, this one's going to the floor.
The dash ones.
Can I ask a question since I was assigned to carry this bill on a day that I wasn't here? So I wanted to just get some clarification. Were the dash one amendments adopted?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash one amendments were not adopted. They were suggested. This was a bill relating to juveniles. It had a nice relating clause. There were some issues that came forward through the process of reevaluating our juvenile and criminal justice system, as you will see in later bills.
I'm trying to figure out why we're reconsidering it.
Because we spoke with the clerk of the Secretary of the Senate, and because it had been posted, we one time up until a couple of days ago, those amendments were still viable. And I got emails and communicated by email with the juvenile directors, and they said after further consideration they were not interested in going forward with the bill, with the amendment.
We're covering a technicality based on the Secretary of the Senate. Her advice to us was that we needed to take this extra step because of how we had posted the bill, and that at this point where you would think and that what we thought we could just do without, just basically let it go back to the floor, that since it had been posted, we needed to go through the procedure just to have it go back out. So this is, lack of better terms, legislative parliamentarian process, and that's why we got it, and we're ready to...
Is there an amendment to this?
No.
All we're doing...
Chair. All right. No amendments.
So we've got the motion there.
And Mr. Chair, I move out.
Well, we got the motion. Was there any objection? I'll just make sure we're there. No objection. So ordered now. Let's go ahead and go.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3295 to the floor with a due pass.
All right, Senator Boquist moves House Bill 3295 as it was actually presented and originally passed out of this committee back to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Bonamici, will you still be our carrier?
I will.
Thank you. You very much. That will save on the SMS.
And I can.
I've got a clue why we just said that. That's all right.
I can actually agree to it this time.
All right. So we will close the work session on House Bill 3295. And we're moving down to.
This is the 2290 to 2285.
Yeah.
So it's a Christmas tree.
All right. So. Where is it on our sheet? Is it 2285?
2/3 the way down.
All right, got it. All right, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2285.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2285 was pre-session filed at the request of the House Interim Judiciary Committee. The original bill, which will. There's an amendment to it. We'll keep the original bill. Clarifies the delivery of more than 1 ounce of marijuana for no consideration as a Class C felony and not a Class A felony. There's a glitch in the statute that was developed as a result of two sessions ago when we categorized crimes by the drugs that were involved for the purposes of being able to follow in research. And there's a discrepancy in the statute right now, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. A delivery of a Class 1 controlled substance is considered an A felony. There's an exception to that where it's for consideration or it relates to marijuana. It's a C felony, and some people have interpreted where there's no consideration of being an A felony, and that causes some constitutional questions concerning proportionality. That's the original bill. You have the A3 amendments in front of you, which allow a police officer to cite an individual for using artificial light from a vehicle while in possession of a bow and arrow, rifle, or other firearm. It clarifies the definition of firearm to mean any weapon designed to expel a projectile by action of powder. Eliminates the sunset in ORS 475-235, which provides that a certified copy of forensic laboratory report signed by an analyst is prima facie evidence of the test results unless the defendant provides notice of objection, in which case the state must produce the analyst at trial. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendments are basically Senate Bill 2290, which is before you. Both these bills have broad relating clauses. What we are doing is removing the contents from 2290, putting them into 2285, so that we can use 2290 as a vehicle to address some community corrections, streamlining bills.
All right. Chair, we'll entertain a motion regarding the A3s.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist moves the A3 and the House Bill 2285. Any discussion?
Just for clarification, Mr. Chair, so the A3 amendment is the same as House Bill 2290.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So this is
basically lifting it out of one into another one.
Consolidation.
All right. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Yes. Mr. Chair, move 2285A as amended by the A3 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2285 as amended by the A3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair will carry 2285 to the floor. I'll close the work session on 2285. And Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2290, probably.
All right, let's drop down. All right, House Bill 2290, folks, are on page 3, second from the bottom, so probably the last in your stack at this stage. And we'll open up the work session on House Bill 2290.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2290, as originally before you, has been moved into 2285, as allows a police officer to cite, et cetera, which you have before you are a series of amendments. This bill is being replaced. And you have the -A6 amendments in front of you, allows the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court to make rules concerning how courts will supervise a person on probation in more than one court. This allows the Chief Justice to streamline the process. You have the A7 amendments allow a judge to impose no more than 60 days of incarceration in jail upon a defendant who has violated his or her probation. Currently, the average time is about 83 days. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this and the next several amendments came as a result of a work group involving the community corrections directors and others, and this is their recommendation for streamlining the process. Next one, the A8 allows reduction of person's probation for good behavior, but not to exceed 50% of the person's probation time. The A7 allows the term of an active post-prison supervision probation, allows reduction of that time once again based on good behavior. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's been some studies done by the Pew Charitable Trust and others that show that allowing someone to earn their way off of probation and post-prison supervision encourages into pro-social behavior. The A10 streamlined the commutation process for illegal immigrants serving time for nonviolent felony and who agreed to waive the right to appeal a deportation. As chair members of the committee, this is a constitutional right that the Constitution gives to the governor. In statute, there's a process and procedure. This basically streamlines the process from, among other things, it applies basically, the streamlined process applies to nonviolent felons in prison who are in this country illegally. Part of what ICE will accept these people early if they agree to waive the deportation, their rights to a hearing as far as deportation goes. That allows them to remove them from the country quickly. For anyone who's been convicted of a crime and deported who comes back to this country, that's a federal crime. The A13 amendments reduce the penalty for possession of a controlled substance from an A or B felony to an A misdemeanor for persons convicted of the first time of possession of a controlled substance under 2 grams, which is basically a user amount. And then after that, reduces the penalty of possession of a controlled substance from an A or B felony to an A misdemeanor for persons convicted of possessing less than 0.05 grams less of a controlled substance. That is basically a residue amount that can be found in a pipe or something similar to that. Chair, members of the committee, these are the 6 amendments before you as it relates to 2290. None of these impact Measure 11 or 57, so it's not a supermajority when the bill goes to the floor.
All right. So, Senator Boquist, do you want to start on the items?
Sure. Sure, I move the A6 into 2290.
Senator Boquist moves A6 is into House Bill 2290. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move the A7 into 2290.
Senator Boquist moves the A7 into House Bill 2290. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move the A8 into 2290.
Senator Boquist moves the A8 in the House Bill 2290. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move the A9 into 2298.
Senator Boquist moves the House A9 in the House Bill 2290. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, move the A10 into 2298.
Senator Boquist moves A10s in the House Bill 2290. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 2290A as amended by the A's.
Got 13s.
Oh, I don't have 13s. I don't have the white sheet here. Okay, Mr. Chair.
House 13s. No 11s.
They just came in this morning.
Yeah. 13.
Literally while you were sitting here.
Chair, move the A12 into...
No.
A13.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Move the A13s into 2298.
Senator Boquist moves the A13s in the House Bill 2290. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I think we now have the 6 amendments in.
Do we have fiscals?
This is Chair, members of the committee. I talked to Tim Walker this morning, and he has the I believe he has the fiscal. But I don't have them before us right now.
All right. And so what we've got a couple that we need to come back to.
This is huge.
Yeah.
I can read it too.
So we're going to carry this into this afternoon. That will give everyone an opportunity. And if we need to reflect on it further, we can. So with that, we do have the adoption of those six amendments, and we'll continue work on that later today. All right, so I'm going to close the work session at this point for House Bill 2290, and let's go ahead and open up the work session on House Bill 2335. That's on page 10, folks.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2335A comes to you from the Oregon District Attorney's Association. States that after decision by the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision not to grant parole to an inmate, a subsequent parole hearing may not be held sooner than 2 years after the denial and no later than 10 years from the date that the prisoner is sentenced to life, sentenced to as a dangerous offender, or a sentence for a crime committed prior November 1, 1989, unless the extended period would exceed the maximum sentence unless good time credits. Allows the inmate to petition for an earlier hearing, requires the board to issue a final order when denying the inmate a parole hearing within 2 years and to issue finding of facts and conclusions of law with the order. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you had the -822 amendments that were just put before you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, these do not replace the bill. They are an add-on to the bill. These amendments basically phase in implementation of Measure 57 in the extent that those who have been sentenced under Measure 57 as repeat property offenders and other parts under the bill will still stay there. Those who have committed aggravated theft against a person over 65, elderly, a crime against the elderly, a fraud against the elderly, Measure 57 would still apply. To drug dealers, significant quantities, Measure 57 would still apply. As it relates to and I guess that's another area that would still apply. There would be otherwise, as it relates to other crimes, that would be phased in on January 1 of 2012. In addition, the bill, as you may see, has a preamble at the beginning of it, whereas the state of Oregon setting forth a reasons for it. In addition to the bill, we also have in there run credit time for nonviolent offenders. Currently, that's at 20%. It would increase for a certain nonviolent offender population an additional 10% to 30%. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, because of Article 1, Section 40 of the Constitution, you will see a provision in there that that's a process and procedure for how these people will go back to court, because any sentence passed in open court has to return to court for modification. So for all these offenders, they will have to go back to court to where there will be a review for on the additional 10%. Chairman of the committee, there is a whole series at the back of the bill, starting in page 33 of the applicability dates. And what this bill sunsets as it relates to Measure 57. And the way Legislative Council's office handles this is what you will see is you will see an amendment to the bill, Measure 57, that this legislature passed. Then you will have, after that, a provision that reinstitutes all that language. In the back of the bill, you will see the applicability dates. What they do is they amend current law and then repeal current law and then reinstate current law all in the same bill. That's the reason for the length of the bill, and that's the reason why it's difficult to read.
All right, Chair will entertain a motion for the adoption of the A22s.
That's the only one. We don't have to do any of these other ones, right?
Are they cumulative? There's a lot of other amendments.
I mean, there's like 20.
In here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thought the staff measure summary was updated. I'm sorry about that. That's considerably earlier. That's our mistake. My mistake. What you have before you was a consolidation of most of those ideas, if they were still.
Mr. Chair, move the A22 into the main bill.
All right, Senator Boquist moves the A22s into House Bill 2335. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'll be supporting the adoption of the amendment with the understanding that we just got this lengthy amendment moments ago.
Well, I got a solution for you. All right, any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. So what we're going to do, we'll go ahead and close the work session on 2335. Now that we got the amendments in, this will give individuals opportunity to reflect on it today. We will be coming back to take care of a few other bills, and this will be one of them that we'll put on for, or we'll carry on into the afternoon. All right. That's it?
That's it?
No, it can't be.
Got four other bills.
All right, so let's go off the record for a moment because I need to.
Another one? Mr. Carey?
All right, we're back in order. We've gotten some of the stuff that we needed for some of the other bills that we still need to work. So we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2175. This work session is open for possible reconsideration.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for possible reconsideration of House Bill 2175A.
Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to allow us to have further consideration or reconsideration on House Bill 2175A. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
On House Bill 2175A, yesterday we adopted the Dash 3 amendments and sent those down to be engrossed. When they got down there, a conflict was noticed because there are several bills that have been changed this session having to do with sex offender registration. So we now have an A4 conflict amendment, which incorporates the A3s that were adopted on the 26th. They do make one additional change. The Department of Corrections had requested an amendment, and all it did was strike language in Section 20 of the A engrossed bill, and that language simply referred to a compact administrator and what the compact administrator had to do. And that language didn't apply, so they simply said that we'd like to have that taken out of the bill. That also is part of the A4 conflict amendment.
All right.
I don't have an A4. That's the A4. That's 2604 on the bill.
Yeah.
I don't have an A4. I got three A4s,
none
for this bill.
My apologies to the members. It was sitting up there. I got my copy off of the file cabinet, so.
We have another?
No.
Courtney's coming. Come to the rescue, Courtney.
Thank you. All right, so basically what I understand is first we need to rescind the previous amendment that was adopted, which my understanding was the A3. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that the A3 amendment previously adopted in House Bill 2175A be removed.
All right. Senator Boquist moves that we rescind the A3 amendment that we have previously adopted in House Bill 2175. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Give me 10 seconds here, Mr. Chair.
And
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 into House Bill 2175. Okay.
All right. Senator Boquist moves the A4s into House Bill 2175. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, it's just my understanding it's a technical fix.
According to the council, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, question to council?
Yes.
Council, given that this is a technical fix, is there any reason to believe that the fiscal will change?
No.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules regarding fiscal statements so that we may consider the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to further consider House Bill 2175 as amended by the A4s. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2175A as amended with the A4s to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2175 as amended by the A4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Ordered. And Senator, I think Boquist, you were original carry on this one, or is it correct?
Yep. Sounds fine with me.
All right.
Thank you very much.
So, does everyone have 3343A4?
Yeah.
Do you want to do the two work sessions, or do you want
to do the work sessions?
Okay. I don't. 3343A4.
All right. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3343A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3343 changes the penalties for off-premises sales licensees to sell liquor to a minor. We had a public hearing on this on May 20th, and it was clear from the public hearing that we meant inadvertent selling to a minor, and so we needed to get an amendment on that. And when we got that amendment, that's the A3 amendment in your staff measure summary, we also found that we have a conflict with Senate Bill 227. So what we have in front of you, and we just got the amendments, was the A4 conflict amendment, which takes the penalties that we increased in Senate Bill 227, and they put it in House Bill 3343 if both bills pass. So the A3 amendment clarifies that it's inadvertent selling to a minor that triggers the special penalties and adds a fourth offense. And and you'll see, if you see the amendment in front of you, what the penalties are. I believe it's in page... the penalties for when both bills pass are on page 5. So it's 350, then 720, then 1,000, and then it kicks into a mandatory fine and $1,000 and a mandatory minimum sentence. So those are the new penalties if both bills pass.
Okay.
We just need to move the amendment.
Yep. We just need to move the A4, the A4 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 into House Bill 3343.
Senator Boquist moves the A4s into House Bill 3343. Any discussion? Any objection? So order.
And this one needs a rule suspension because there's not a fiscal on the A4.
Question of council, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is there any reason to be, since this is some technical corrections, so on and so forth, is there any reason to indicate that the fiscal impact will go up?
I would expect it to be minimal, like the original bill.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules in regard to fiscal statements so that we may move the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves that we suspend the rules to consider further consideration of House Bill 3343 as amended by the A4s. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3343 as amended with the dash 4. Is it dash 4, isn't it?
Dash
A4 to the floor with the due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 3343 as amended by the A4s to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And any volunteers? Senator Dingfelder will take this one. Thank you very much. That closes that work session.
And 3021 is the last one.
Well, we also have 2403. Is that one we're coming back on?
We do. Oh, we haven't had public hearing on that one.
Okay.
That's a public hearing.
Okay. All right. So we're going to go to House Bill, open up the work session on House Bill 3021.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3021A was the Oregon Law Commission's bill on emergency liability for volunteers. And we heard this on May 20th. At that time, there was a disagreement between the parties on how to treat search and rescue volunteers and whether we need to cover them with workers' compensation or medical insurance. Since then, at that time, the chair ordered a work group. We had a work group meeting last Friday. I am pleased to report that we have brand new amendments in front of you that everybody agrees to. Those are the A14 amendments, and along with those are the A13 amendments that are conflict amendments that are required. The A14 amendments basically do what the A10 amendments do in the staff's measure summary. They require all search and rescue volunteers to be covered by workers' compensation insurance. It requires self-insured counties to be able to use the assigned risk pool to cover their volunteers. And this made it so it would be a lot less expensive than covering them all from square one with regular workers' compensation insurance. We have parties from the work group here. If you have any questions about what the assigned risk pool is or any other questions, I do need to say for the record that repealing 401515 does not affect the liability of local governments. Is that correct, Mr. Snyder?
Yes, Council.
That was a yes from the back of the room.
Yes, Council.
Mr. Snyder.
He's very persistent on having that on the record.
Okay. All right. So the chair will entertain a motion for either set of the amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the, we're doing both the A13s
and
14s, correct?
And 14.
A13s into House Bill 3021.
So Dingfeld moves the adoption of the A13s and House Bill 3021. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the A14s into House Bill 3021.
Senator Dingfelder moves the adoption of the A14s into House Bill 3021. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move.
We don't have fiscals on these.
Suspension.
I move to suspend the rules for both the dash A13s and dash A14s for the purposes of putting them into the bill.
Senator Dingfelder moves that we suspend the rules to consider further deliberation on the movement of House Bill 3021 as amended by the A13s and the A14s. Any discussion?
Question, Council. Considering the amendments and you worked on them and looking at the main fiscal, it doesn't appear that it would change.
The fiscal will be exactly as the A10 amendment fiscal, which you have in front of you, which was substantially similar to the main bill fiscal. And it's explanatory and indeterminate.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3021 as amended with the A13s and A14s to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Dingfelder moves House Bill 3021 as amended by the A13s and the A14s to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I have concerns, and I'll be a no vote at this time while I review it, and then I'll reserve my right to change when I get to the floor.
All right. Senator Wisson? All right. So I'm going to say any objection, and please note on the record that Senator Boquist and Senator Wissett are objecting at this time, but reserving the right after review to change their position on the floor. With that, so ordered. And Senator Bonamici, do you want this one or do you want me?
I will carry this.
Senator Bonamici will be our carrier of House Bill 3021A. We'll close the public hearing, work session on that bill, and I think we're now ready to go into public hearings. And what I'm going to do is this. I'm not sure who's here for House Bill 2403, but whoever is here, Mike, I think I'm going to need you to come back this afternoon. Based on what I'm hearing from other committees, I think what we're going to try to do is set a carryover to 4 p.m., and I'm looking at my chair to Environment Natural
Resources
and the chair of
We should be done by 4.
We're going to say 4 so we can get started. If we're ready, if not, we'll have another delay, but we'll get started as soon as we can instead of putting out in the evening where we don't have to be here as long waiting for the posted time. So at this point, for everyone here, realize that we're carrying over whatever work we don't complete till this afternoon, and we're going to schedule that to reconvene at 4. And I believe it will be in this room. If not, please keep contact with the staff, and they'll let you know what hearing room they put us in. With that, I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2827. All right, so Andy, Representative Olson's here. We've got Kelly Clark, and we have Aaron Olson. So the three of you are going to be the first.
That'd be very good, Mr. Chair.
All right. And when you read the kickoff, let us go.
I will. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2827A extends the statute of limitations for an action based on child abuse, provides that an action must commence before the victim reaches age 40 or within 5 years from the date victim discovers the causal connection between the injury and the abuse, whichever is longer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of the Albany area. House Bill 2827 gives the victim a chance to seek justice. It changes the civil statute of limitations for actions based on conduct that constitutes child abuse or conduct knowingly allowing, permitting, or encouraging child abuse. Additionally, this bill requires that an action must be commenced before claimant attains 40 years of age or not more than 5 years from the date the claimant discovered or in exercise of reasonable care should have discovered causal connection between child abuse and injury, whichever period is longer. About a year ago, I began paying attention to the need to extend the statute of limitations involving child abuse. Keep in mind, I'm referring to the civil side. I was contacted by a mother whose daughter had been sexually abused as a child by a family member. The daughter is now an adult and is having severe emotional problems from past abuse, but is unable to seek action in this case due to current law. I have come to learn that many victims become aware of their injuries later in life, and unfortunately, many of these victims have no avenue to pursue the perpetrator due to the amount of time passed. Initially, I was skeptical about this issue, because I felt the person should clearly know before they turn age 40 if their past abuse had caused an injury. By injury, I mean psychological or emotional besides just physical. Currently, the law is not more than 6 years after the victim attains age 18 or within 3 years of the date the victim discovers or should have discovered the injury or the connection between the abuse and the injury. This past summer, I had the opportunity to talk with two victims who are now adults that were sexually abused as children. Both of these individuals were intelligent, career-oriented people with families. By all appearances, they have it together, Mr. Chair. They explained to me how they did not connect the dots between their past abuse and their current emotional injuries until many years afterwards. They both remembered they were victims of abuse, feeling they had moved on and the past was not causing any problems now. But that was not the case for either one of these individuals. And for example, there was a father that I listened to in his early 50s explained how he became aware of his injuries when his son reached the age the dad was when he was abused. And at that time, the father withdrew from his son, from his family, from his marriage. He basically checked out. And he later realized his current behavior was connected to the past abuse, connecting the dots. At this point, to kind of continue moving forward, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'd like to have Kelly Clark, used to serve in this building with us, and he can help explain more of what the bill's about, specifically toward the description of injury and causal connection.
All right, Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Kelly Clark. I'm a lawyer in Portland. From 1989 to 1983, I had the distinct privilege of serving as a member of the House from Clackamas County, and something I will always consider to be a tremendous honor, so I appreciate your service and recognize the long hours that you're going through right now, and will attempt to be brief. Most of my practice these days is representing children who were sexually abused or adults who were sexually abused as children. And I'm proud to say that Oregon has long led the nation in attempting to protect children from the unmitigated tragedy of child sexual abuse.
Just weeks ago, this legislature passed a bill prohibiting school districts from covering up child abuse. Historically, we have extended criminal statutes of limitations. We have engaged in child abuse awareness campaigns. We passed the nation's first criminal law against the possession of child pornography. We have been a leader. And finally, Oregon was one of the first legislatures in the nation to recognize that victims of child abuse need time to process what happened to them. We first passed an extended statute of limitations in the late 80s and amended again in the early 90s. I would say this, to the extent that institutions who deal with children, what I call institutions of trust, face civil liability for knowingly allowing, permitting, or encouraging child abuse, they tighten up their policies and they clean up their houses. However, there are two practical problems with the current law in operation, and House Bill 2827 seeks to address those two problems. First of all, we know that of the small percentage of people who come forward to tell about their child abuse, and only about 10% of abuse victims ever disclose to the authorities that they were abused. But of the small percentage who do come forward, many times people do not understand until they are in their 30s, 40s, or 50s that they have been injured by what happened. And this may seem odd, but it is the mental health reality. I have had the privilege of representing over 200 men and women abused as children. And in the last decade, the average age of the person that has walked into my office is somewhere between 40 and 50 years of age. They do not recognize by age 24 what happened to them caused them injury. It just doesn't happen. The mental health scientists can tell you why, but the practical reality is it doesn't happen. The bill seeks to address that by moving the floor from age 24 to age 40. The second practical problem has to do with the three-year window. Under current law, if you don't file a lawsuit by age 24, you have 3 years after that, once you make the connection between your injury and your abuse, to file a lawsuit. And again, this is unrealistically short. Most times, people come to grips with their abuse. They have what the mental health professionals call a trigger that causes them to start thinking about what happened in the middle of some kind of a life crisis. They're going through a divorce. They're going through intensive marital counseling. They have a mental breakdown. They're in drug and alcohol rehab. A parent or a relative dies. They begin to look seriously at their life, and they begin to admit to themselves. They begin to speak about the unspeakable, and they begin to say, I have to deal with this. The fact that it happens in the middle of a life circumstance, a life crisis, means that the three-year window is simply too short to allow people to process what happened to them, begin to get well, and then consider whether they want to bring civil justice or not. It's a big decision. So this bill raises the window, if you will, from 3 years to 5 years. Finally, and I will not belabor this, there's been some significant confusion in the courts about the meaning of the word injury within the statute, and so House Bill 2827 attempts to clarify and codify what the courts have basically said this statute is attempting to do with the word injury and causal connection. One final note, and it has to do with the Catholic Church, and I want to address this head on. This bill is not aimed at any particular institution of trust. We know, unfortunately, that child abusers are often drawn to, and sometimes develop within, institutions of trust. Many of these institutions are ones that we respect. They do good things for society. Churches, schools, child care centers, scouting organizations. Unfortunately, however, many of these organizations can and have been infected by the cancer of child abuse. To the extent those institutions, particularly the Catholic Church, are a safer place than they were 20 or 30 years ago, I suggest that one significant reason is because 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 men and women stood up around the country and filed lawsuits. So we believe this is a child abuse prevention bill. However, neither the Catholic Church or the Mormon Church, both of which I understand oppose this bill, are the targets of this bill. Probably half the people who come see me are victims of family abuse. One of the victims you're going to hear from this morning was abused by her stepfather. Much of this happens in the family or the extended family context and has nothing to do with an institution. This bill is not aimed at any particular institution. Finally, to the extent that it affects any institution, I would argue that the Catholic Church in Oregon is in a better position than any other institution because they sought and achieved bankruptcy protection
They filed bankruptcy in 2004. The bankruptcy plan that was confirmed in 2007 required them to set aside a fund of $20 million for all future claims, a future claim being defined as abuse that happened in the past, but it's filed after the cutoff of the bankruptcy. It doesn't matter whether they face 20 claims or 100 claims or 200 claims. Their liability for old child abuse is limited to the $20 million fund. And so to that extent, the church, the Catholic Church, in any event, in my view, has no logical reason to oppose this bill. I'll be very surprised if anybody from the Catholic Church says that they anything different than what I just said about the effect of the bankruptcy plan and the future claims fund.
Mr. Clark, I need you to wrap up, and we'll let them testify for themselves as to what their positions are on the bill.
That's fine. I will just say this in closing, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Representative Olson for his leadership on this. I've been honored to represent the men and women you're going to hear from in a few minutes. This bill will help prevent child abuse. It's a good bill. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Before Ms. Olson goes, let me just tell you, I've got three people that are on this list that are traveled over 100 miles, and it looks to me that we're going to have to carry some of this hearing over maybe to this afternoon to take some additional testimony depending on how long people can stay. I'm not. We're scheduled to close in 10 minutes. So
maybe we should have them come up.
That's what I'm thinking at this point.
Out.
So, Representative, if it's all right with you, what I'd like to do is get the three people that have traveled the greatest distance, let them get their testimony this morning, so if they have other plans to need to travel back to wherever they need to go, they can get that done, and then we can continue. I'll stay. We have to be on the floor at 10:15. I personally will stay to hear at least Ms. Olson. She's in this first panel.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's fine. I just give you a heads up to that. I had mentioned to everybody to try to stay within a two-minute framework to
understand, but that hasn't happened yet.
Right, got that. Okay. I'll take authoritative action.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so the people I'd like to please come forward, I have Vaughn Tidwell, Randy Ellison, and it looks like Robert Falls, I believe. Gentlemen, whoever wants to go first, I just need you to state your name for the record, and then if you'll give us your testimony.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Vaughn Tidwell. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, for this opportunity. At about the age of 12, 13, and 14, I was attacked by a sexual predator. He sexually abused me. He was my scoutmaster. He was also my church leader. I have no idea what I actually felt at that time. I can't remember. I have never forgotten it happened, though. I did what any human would do. I tried to forget, not think about it, make it go away. I tried to carry on, using very instinctive survival skills, the only survival skills I could muster as a boy. I withdrew, became defensive, and built up barriers. Every once in a while, as I grew to manhood, something would force me to remember. But I was really good at shoving it back down and ignoring it.
The fact that predator had destroyed my life
and that of many people around me was something I knew nothing about until events caused me to face the facts at a much later date. It all came out in a flesh storm. I recall details, feelings, locations. Remembering the hideous facts was a nightmare I would not want any person on this earth to face. I wanted to force it down inside again, but I could not. It was in my mind constantly, likened by my counselor as a trauma worse than any imaginable. I had to deal with it. 40 years. After the attacks, it came up in my mind and I could not forget it or hide it anymore. The The trigger that caused me to clearly bring it up was as innocuous as going to a movie. That is exactly when it happened. I was watching a movie in a theater with a friend. I have been in counseling since. I have dealt with the worst of depression. Suicide has been considered a real option. The predator has been convicted of sexual child abuse in another state, but there has never been a conviction for the attacks on the boys in his Boy Scout troop. I was to learn I was not alone. Many other boys were attacked. Some knew, some deny, some now know, some are just now remembering. I have seen them and talked to them and worked as a friend to help them. Many of their lives are utterly ramshacked. Drugs, alcohol, lost jobs, marriages in shambles or worse, and destitution. It is horrible to go back to my hometown and see my childhood. We were destroyed as innocent youth for life. I know I will never be totally healed, but I am working on it. The counseling helps. The hope I receive in knowing that laws exist to help victims bring predators to justice, regardless of timetable, helps tremendously. It is therapeutic to know I can help stop this. It is helpful to know other young boys will be better protected. Prevention is the answer. Bringing predators to justice will help prevent future tragedies. So how can we prevent similar stories? This is not about repressed memory. It is not about money or lawyers. It's about prevention. If I can do anything at all to keep only one child from being subjected to the life I now face, I will do anything I can. Giving predators a get-out-of-jail-free card by applying statutes in our legal system to limit actions based on a calendar is unreasonable. No one knows when they will remember. No one knows when they will have the courage to seek help. No one knows when they will feel it is time to help bring the predators to justice. Nature gives the victim the courage to proceed. If a law with a time limit precludes the victim's ability to move forward, only further pain and devastation is the result. It will cause more children to face the trauma. It will damage the ability to heal. I ask you to help prevent sexual child abuse by allowing victims the right to expose the predators when the time is right for them and not contingent on an arbitrary time limitation. Anything you can do to extend the time a person has to act will help turn the tide. It will help our society prevent one of the most tragic and despicable of acts. Our children will all thank you. Thank you.
Who'd like to go next?
Chairman Przanski, distinguished members, committee members, my name is Randy Ellison, and I am a victim survivor of sexual abuse by my minister as a teenager. I have lived a life very alone emotionally, and I have trusted no one. I have adamantly fought anyone, including bosses, who tried to control me in any way. Anytime someone at work tried to get me to do something I didn't feel right about, I moved on and never looked back. I've had 5 different major careers, moved my family to 5 different cities, and lived in 18 different homes. I became an alcoholic and a drug addict. My daughters had to grow up without my assistance, and my wife of 38 years has gone it mostly alone. The power differential between a minister, teacher, or parent and a child is as great as the difference between the mighty Mississippi and a seasonal creek. An adult that important to a child is on a pedestal and cannot possibly do wrong in the eyes of the child. I never admitted I was a victim or that my minister mentor was a predator until 2 years ago. It took me 3 months in therapy at age 56 before I could identify those acts even as a crime. It has taken me 2 more years to process the shame of being a victim and what I allowed to happen to my life as a result of it. Most victims are never able to make the associations I did, even this late in life. And if they do, most as I are unable to send their perpetrators to jail, even with rock-solid evidence due to the statute of limitations. Our only avenue to speak our truth and seek justice is in civil court. Some would say that I am a successful victim. On the surface, it might appear that way. But surviving is not living. I want the opportunity to go beyond being a survivor. The only way for me to become whole again is through the civil courts. Please consider this bill a way to offer that option to as many child victims as possible. Today, this committee stands at a crossroads of helping define acceptable human behavior. Will you defend pedophiles and institutions? Or will you take a stand to make a difference and support child victims? I hope you reach out your hand to the victims and send HB 2827 without amendment to the full Senate and help shine a light on this horrible, invisible epidemic. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert?
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Robert Fowles. I'm the Associate Director of Educational Services for the Northwest District of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm here on behalf of our office and my Executive Director, Mr. Richard Winiger. I will summarize the letter that we sent to you. Basically, what we are opposing in this bill is the wording as it is stated. We are certainly not opposed to the system and how it goes forward with this kind of legislation, but I would like to highlight a couple things regarding the process with HB 2827 as well as the wording. We are concerned that any time the legislative body changes the statutes of limitations, it should be carefully debated within a period of time with input from the public, and I thank you for allowing all of us to speak to that. Certainly, prompt action is always required when abuse is detected, and we always encourage that through our system. We also would like to raise the issue of the number of volunteers that are in our schools and the effect it may have on those folks. And most importantly, we'd like to point out the private organization only statement is a bit of a puzzle to us in the bill. The public sector serves many, many more children than the private sector, and we are concerned about that. So we would just like to share that with you. I thank you for the time that you've given to us.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for any of the panelists? Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward and being willing to give your stories as you have. All right. So what we're going to do here, I've got committee members are probably going to need to be leaving. It's about 3 after 10. Ms. Olson, I said I'd take your testimony now. Why don't you come on up and we'll take your testimony. I'm going to conclude the testimony until this afternoon.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Erin Olson. I'm an attorney in Northeast Portland and I represent vulnerable victims of abuse and exploitation. I'm here in support of House Bill 2827. I've provided some written testimony, which I won't repeat here. The last time this body amended the Child Abuse Statute of Limitations was in 1993. And since that time, the public as a whole has learned a lot about child abuse, most notably about its prevalence and also about its effects. In terms of the prevalence, the statistics commonly accepted are that 1 in 4 women was molested as a child and 1 in 5 men was molested as a child. That's a significant number if you look around this room and figure out what odds are in terms of who is. A week ago today, the Mayo Clinic came out with a study on the psychological effects of child abuse. We learn more and more each year, and a consensus is that the psychological trauma associated with child abuse results in delayed reporting and often delayed discovery. And there's been discussion of prevention, and prevention of child abusers required that they be identified. And they're not going to be identified unless they're reported. And as Mr. Clark noted, only about 10% of child abusers are reported to authorities. House Bill 2827 gives children an opportunity to report more predators, even belatedly. But the other thing that we know about child abusers is that they don't attempt to limit their abuse to just one victim. You're going to hear later from Letty Merritt, who's one of my clients. It took her years to muster the emotional reserves to come forward and try and confront her abusers. I will let her tell her own story, but you will hear from her that the emotional trauma that was caused by the abuse incapacitated her until she was nearly 40. There's no downside to this bill. You've heard from the prior witness that the religious organizations are going to try and point out that it affects private entities and not public ones, but so do our laws. We have a Tort Claims Act for a reason. This body wouldn't even consider this law if it affected the statute of limitations for claims against governmental entities, so I would ask that you not get hung up on that. We've always treated the government differently. There is no downside. There's no downside to exposing more abusers. Most of the abusers who will be affected, or most of the victims who will be affected by this bill, no longer have a criminal remedy, and this remedy is all that they have left. On their behalf, I ask you to support this bill and send it on to the Senate. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Now, first, are there any questions for Ms. Olson? There are not. Thank you very much for coming forward. All right, colleagues, this is where we're at. Perfect timing. I think the bell is just wrong. We are going to conclude for this morning. We will reconvene somewhere around 4 o'clock. That's what we're going to say as a start time so people know. I believe we're going to be in this room, but not sure. So there's a possibility that we could be in one of the main hearing rooms on the first floor, A through F. The staff will figure out what room we're going to be in and realize that once we have clearance of everyone coming out of committees, we'll be back. We'll reconvene as quickly as we can at or near after 4 and continue the testimony on House Bill 2827. We also have a public hearing on 2403, which will be very quick. And then we have a couple other bills that we had. Now, realize, committee members, we are just adjourning, recessing, I should say, until this afternoon. So all of the bills that we've heard today are still in our possession. I'm asking staff, we've worked very hard today, thank you all very much, and staff, to just reflect over everything, make sure we got all the T's crossed, all the I's dotted, and if not, we may need to bring one of these other bills back just to make certain we've done what we needed to do. And we'll have some other, I'll have some other statements to make at the conclusion of today's hearings. With that,
we'll be in this room.
We will.
We'll be.
It's my understanding we will be returned to this room, and like I said, we'll try to start close to 4 as we can, and so until then, we are in recess.
Would it be possible for staff to give us a list of the bills that will be back in play this afternoon?
Yeah, and that's what we'll do is ask staff to let us know what bills may still be in play besides the ones that we've already noted.
I appreciate that.
That way we won't have to carry everything down. All right, with that, we're in recess until this afternoon.